Welcome into a new episode of the Bengals Beat Podcast. I'm Kelsey Conway here with my co-host Mike Hilton. What's up?
What's up, Kelsey? How you doing?
Good. We had a Memorial Day weekend. Before we introduce our guests.
Special guest.
How was your weekend?
It was good. Much needed. Spent some time with the family. Cooked out and everything. Ate good. So,
what's your favorite cookout food?
Either ribs or baked beans.
Okay.
If you know how to cook some ribs or baked beans, invite me to your cookout, please.
So you're not talking about just like the canned beans?
No.
Okay. That's what I would bring to the special touch too.
You gotta add your own touch.
Well, we're super excited to introduce our next guest.
I'm
excited for this episode because we really don't know a lot about you, and this is the perfect environment to get to know you. Yep. So without further ado, let's welcome in Nick Scott, the Bengals' new safety.
Yes, sir. What's going on? Happy to be here.
Thank you for joining us. Nick and Mike just finished up practice, and they're kind enough to come over to our studio to talk a little bit today. So I guess we'll just kick it off and ask you how your first couple of months in Cincinnati have been.
They've been busy, real busy. You know, you got to move in, getting everything moved from L.A. over here. I've been building a lot of drawers, dressers, and nightstands.
IKEA?
All that stuff. We went to IKEA. I got a whole thing with IKEA. Me and my wife get into it, but I don't really like IKEA. But
Court furniture, baby.
Wayfair is the way to go. Get it straight to your door. Sometimes it's made for you.
Wayfair is smooth.
It's smooth. It's smooth. But,
what do they say? Happy wife, happy life.
Happy life, exactly.
So IKEA, you don't like it. How do you feel about IKEA?
Yeah, I think it's all right. I mean, I'm more of a Court furniture type of guy, so.
Okay. Yeah.
I think.
Here's my thing with IKEA. It's like, I don't like feeling like a sheep, right? You go in IKEA, they got everything lined up for you to have arrows and a walkway that you got to go through. Mm-hmm. And you just kind of shuffle through like you're getting herded. I hate that. I hate that. I like to divert.
Whatever I see, I want to go do it.
Right?
Nah, they tell you going this way. Yeah, this way.
You know, you following it. You gonna look at this. You gonna look at this next. All right. If you don't like this, you got this after.
So we're not gonna be seeing on your Instagram. You know how sometimes people do like the Instagram ads where they have to post something like hashtag ad hashtag IKEA partner.
No, that will not be
Nick Scott.
Not unless they build a whole separate IKEA like a. Go where it you where
Free
you want
in IKEA.
IKEA, right? Yeah. No path, just divert. Do what you want.
IKEA say they keeping their thing strict.
Yeah, they get it in, get it out.
I will say, and I mean, I'm not the most handy person, but I do feel like it's a little bit of false advertisement because they make it seem like it's all they had to give you is like two wrenches and you can put together this big bed. And half the time you get halfway through and you're so frustrated, you just want to pay someone to assemble it. Yeah. And it's not as easy as IKEA says it is.
Yeah, I think that's everything too, though. I kind of fall in the same little trap with Wayfair. It's just, it never tells you like how many actual pieces there might be. You know what I'm saying? It might look simple and then you get it and it's like broken down into a million pieces. Yep. But now it's all out on the floor. Like, you can't just look at
that
it.
That one piece
you
always
got a wife
missing.
And a baby that's waiting for you to build the crib. Like, you know what I'm saying? You got to put
pressure.
It together. Yeah, you got pressure on you now. But it's like, dang, if I knew there was 225 pieces, I would have got something else.
I hear you on that. Well, that actually is a good leading point to what I wanted to ask you about to start is... For the audience that's not quite familiar with Nick's story yet, he was previously on the Los Angeles Rams. We'll save all the Super Bowl questions for the end.
But you
just moved your whole family across the country.
Yeah.
What did you do with the stuff that was in your house or apartment in LA? Like, what do you guys do with that when you have to move so much as football players?
Yeah, so my situation might be a little bit different. Everybody's is different. Yeah. Depending on where you live and how long you've been there. So I actually have a home in Los Angeles, and that's where I train and everything like that. So don't do that, Mike. Don't do that, Mike.
No way.
Simi Valley. As a matter of fact, all my teammates was making fun of me because they like, man, your son's from Simi Valley, dog. Like that. But yeah, I still got a house out there. I train out there, so... it's a little bit easier because we don't have to overhaul everything. We can keep some stuff behind and, you know, possibly rent the space out, things like that. Let people rent the furniture out. So yeah, we got a small little spot here. So we're plugging in place. Some stuff I'll bring over. Some stuff I'll leave.
What did you do when you were moving from Pittsburgh here?
Pretty much the same stuff. We got a house out in Atlanta. So we kind of pretty much had our stuff moved all the way back to Atlanta. Mm-hmm. And then we pretty much just piece by piece brought back what we needed. You know, we still got plenty of stuff at the house. So it's easy to travel with. And, you know, I have really most of my winter clothes here for the winter time when the season comes. Now my summer clothes usually back home. So, you know, it definitely makes it a little easier when you got somewhere to put your stuff already.
Yeah, home base.
So
yeah.
When did you signed with the Bengals, and we'll get into the story of how you ended up here, but that happened in mid-March. When did you and your wife and your son fully move here?
So mid-March, when OTAs began, my wife and I, we got a hotel for like 15 days. So we were just kind of living out there with the baby, which
tough.
I don't tough. Recommend. We got a little studio suite. And so anytime we put him down for a nap, we were in like prison. Like the lights were off. Mm-hmm. We were texting each other. We couldn't talk because we didn't want to wake him up. Like it was crazy. We couldn't leave, anything like that. So it was definitely an experience. But see, this is what I do. I get sidetracked. What were you talking about?
When you guys first moved here.
When we first moved here,
like,
right.
Timeline.
So we brought a whole bunch of stuff over. And so basically what we did is we said we got 15 days to find a spot. So every day we were pretty much looking at different apartments and everything like that. We settled on Aqua on the Levee across in Newport. And so she went back to get some more stuff. I kept all the stuff I brought here and was sleeping on an air mattress in the apartment for the first 2 weeks of OTAs.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. That sounds about right. That's really how the process goes.
And yeah, it's not as glamorous as everyone
not
thinks.
Not always, man. Not always, but you know, it's a process.
Definitely
everything.
Cool, obviously, seeing different cities that you know you might have never just gone to because what we do, we're going to see different cities and have to move. But yeah, the process isn't as easy as people think.
I think looking back, you'll definitely appreciate kind of like the experience you get with moving in different cities and, you know, just getting established somewhere else and all that takes.
That reminded me of Trenton Irwin. Apparently, he lived in Ted Karras's pool house. He lived in hotels. And he's been in the league a couple of years now. But I can see why it's hard because if you're on the practice squad, you just don't know.
Yeah,
so unless you can find like a month-to-month place that's
which
not crazy expensive.
Exactly.
Yeah, no, that's true. And that's pretty much the reason why I bought in LA is because the way things were going, I thought I was going to be there. So I was like, all right, let me settle down. Let me buy a house here. And the league moves so fast. Things are always changing. Yep. So I went from being like, oh, yeah, I'm all good. Like, this is where I'm going to be to, you know, I don't know where I'm going to be. So it all worked out, though.
So let's talk about, before we go to LA, and I didn't even realize it until I'm sitting across from both of you. Both of you, you can say, kind of defied the odds to get to where you are. Yep. You were undrafted, your seventh round draft pick. I think that's really cool.
And that was actually one of the first things me and Nick kind of talked about. He didn't know I was undrafted. I thought he was undrafted, but he was a late seventh, which is, you know, pretty much the same. And that's
pretty much, yeah.
you said it.
It's the same thing. It's so true, man. Them late rounds, you might as well be undrafted.
But I kind of felt like that's kind of how we connected off real. We both worked hard to kind of get where we are now, and you know, we still got plenty to go, so we're excited to kind of be on the same field and
for sure
share that energy
for sure. Friendly fire.
So where are you from?
Oh man, that's a tough question. So I say I'm from Boston. I was born and raised in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. I lived there until I was about 10. Then I moved to Boston, lived there for 6 or 7 years, and then my last 2 years of high school I was in Virginia. So I bounced around for a little bit.
You're from Pennsylvania.
No, I'm from Boston.
I had my formative years in Boston. But you spent 10.
But what do you do when you 10? What did you learn
that's
when you 10? Nothing.
That's a good point.
Boston molded me. You know what I'm saying?
You like Boston?
I love it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. really hurt by my Celtics.
I was about to ask you too.
They did not show up for that game.
It was tough. And I'm not going to get into it because there's kind of a code of pro athletes. So I'm not going to get here and talk about certain guys and stuff like that. But we'll just leave it at I was really hurt. I had my hopes up. I thought they was going to, you know, make history. But, you know, that's.
It doesn't matter. Nuggets in five sports. Or six.
Yeah.
Nuggets at four. Nuggets in,
I think Miami can get one.
I don't think so.
They can get one.
All that running around and playing hard and it can only get you so far.
Yeah, that's true.
I was shocked at this. I mean, because I thought once watching the game on Saturday night, I was like, well, the amount of luck that they got when they got the putback as the buzzer went out, I'm like, well, they're definitely going to win this series now. I mean, you can't get much more lucky than that.
It seemed like it was set up perfect for them to go out there and win it last night.
Yeah, perfect story.
They seem to get very close and just can't
get over the top.
Can't go over the top. I can think of a couple other football teams that reminds me of, but we won't go there.
Yeah, man, it's tough. Really tough.
Boston, we'll go with Boston. Yeah. Boston's where you're from. Yeah. Spent some time in Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. Did you split years in high school?
Yeah, so I did 2 years at Brookline High School, which is like right outside Boston. Then I did 2 years at Fairfax High School.
Okay.
So just kind of bounced around. My dad was constantly getting elevated in different roles and whatnot. So we just kind of followed suit, but it all worked out.
And what position did you play? I've learned to ask this because Cam Taylor's story.
So in high school, I was actually, for most of my years, a quarterback.
Everybody played quarterback.
Yeah, that's what the athletes play.
Zach's playbook is growing.
Yeah, but just to give you a little clue of what kind of quarterback was, I played quarterback, but I got recruited for running back almost everywhere. So if you wasn't open within the first half second, I was gone. Yeah.
So you wasn't trying to pick them apart. You trying to run the ball.
Tuck that thing.
Would you describe yourself similar to Lamar Jackson?
Here's what I'll say.
Give us your NFL comp.
Here's what I'll say. If I was 6'2", I would have been the best dual threat quarterback in the country.
Wow. You're going to stand behind that statement.
I'm going to stand behind that. Watch the tape. Watch the tape. Now, I had a little arm, I could move. I could run. Like I said, I was recruited for a running back. That was my main thing. My senior year, I started out as a quarterback. Then halfway through, they were like, you might as well just go ahead and line up in the backfield, play running back. So
after high school, we all know you went to Penn State.
Mm-hmm.
Did you have other schools you were considering since you said you got a lot of offers to play running back? Or how did you end up at Penn State in the Happy Valley?
So kind of goes back to being in Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm.
I grew up a Penn State fan. My brothers grew up going to Penn State games, and I had a god brother who played there. So I actually never got to see him play there, but I just kind of grew up around Penn State and everything like that. So when I got the offer, it was kind of like a no-brainer. You get an opportunity to play for your dream school. So I got a couple offers in the ACC and Big Ten and stuff like that, but I committed pretty early. I think I got the offer right after the football season. I went for a visit and committed. To play running back, which is crazy because.
Was Saquon then?
He came later, and that's why.
They made you switch that.
That's why. That is completely understandable.
He came in the room and no, here's what it was. It was Saquon, but like it was my redshirt freshman year, so sophomore year of school, I was still playing running back. So I did 2 years of running back. And it was going really well. I had a really good camp. It was looking like we could share some time, maybe.
Yeah.
Right? We were having a good competition. He was clearly kind of like the front runner, but he wasn't like our starter yet.
Yeah.
We had a guy named Akil Lynch who was kind of driving the bus. He was a fifth year senior or something, whatever. So Akil ends up going down during the season. During camp, I actually like got a high ankle sprain. So I'm wrapping it up every day, still trying to compete for a job. Mm. But at that point, it's like there's only so much you can do.
Right.
Not taking anything away from him because he's. You see the talent he is. But I remember, it's so funny. I came back from my injury and I was getting some carries here and there, like maybe one or two a game. We get about the third game, Akil's out. Me, Mark Allen, and Saquon are kind of splitting carries to a degree. He's getting a bulk. He snapped so hard one drive. Like he busted like a 40-yarder and then a 40-yarder. And then the next play, he ran it up the middle, jumped over their free safety and almost scored, right? And I'm looking on the sideline and like, I'm like, dang, like.
I might need to switch position.
No, here's what did it for me. I look over at James Franklin. He's in the headset talking to our running back coach, right? He grabs the headset. He goes, "That's your starting running back right there." And I looked over at Coach Smith, our corners coach, and I kid you not, I went up to him in that moment and I said, jokingly, because that's what I do. Yeah. I try to keep a light heart. I said, "Hey, coach, you still got room in that DB room?" Because I knew. And then right after that season, I made the switch.
That, well, before I ask you questions about the switch, mm-hmm. since you're talking about Saquon, mm-hmm. I want both of your opinions on this. Mm-hmm. The conversation surrounding running backs and the shelf life of them, mm-hmm. age-wise, contracts-wise, yeah. is a big topic right now.
Right.
Especially with Saquon, because he is, I think they franchise tagged him.
They're trying to franchise tag him, yeah.
But he doesn't want it, I believe I read. So. Well, right. But we won't put words in right. our mouth till we know about it for sure. Right. What do you both think about the running back spot in that? If you were GMs, would a running back turning 26 with a lot of miles on him scare you for signing another
You want to start?
Yeah, if I'm putting on my GM mindset, I actually would think what I would agree with that, because this is just me. Personally, I think running back is probably the easiest position to transition from college to the NFL.
Mm. Really? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I honestly didn't. Like, I could be wrong, but that's just my feeling. As a ball player, I feel mm-hmm. like that's the easiest position to transition with. So I feel like you'll be able to find some guys, some later, cheaper guys, or some younger, cheaper guys that can come in. Obviously, might not produce up to the same standards, but can mm-hmm. keep a quality run game. You know, obviously, make your quarterback's mm-hmm. job a lot easier. But I think once they hit 26, 27, especially they have some decent miles on their legs, it can get tough after that.
Yeah, I kind of agree with you. And
did you play with Todd Gurley?
I did for a year, so I kind of saw that how that turned out. And it was just kind of tough to see from the standpoint of I think it was pretty apparent that he wasn't as healthy as he would have liked. Mm-hmm. And it's unfortunate that when you get a player that's been in that position, the NFL or organization has the ability to just kind of spit you out because you're not valuable anymore. You're not worth it anymore. Mm-hmm. So that's an unfortunate reality about our game. But to Mike's point, like when you look at that position and specifically, you look at a specific player and how much wear and tear they might have, I think that definitely plays a larger part than maybe just their age.
Yeah.
I don't necessarily believe in like some of the taboos around like being 29 or 30 in the NFL. I think that number is kind of used to bring people's numbers down mm-hmm. a little too much rather mm-hmm. than their production and whether or not they've had injuries and things like that.
Yep.
So that's a whole nother issue. But in that position specifically, looking at guys' wear and tear, I definitely understand, you know, for like he said, if I'm being a GM, you know, those guys at the end of the day, those GMs are trying to protect these owners in their pockets and they put a lot of trust in them. So
it's also kind of the game changing in a sense. There's definitely a lot. Obviously, everybody's throwing the ball 45
times.
That is true.
Well, so since we're talking about running backs, the reason this conversation really came back up this year was because of Bijan Robinson.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And people, draft scouts and analysts said he was a top five prospect on their board. But mm-hmm. how high is too high for Bijan? Because I think a lot of people got scared after Saquon and yeah. the Giants taking him so high and some of the injuries that he sustained in his career. But then Bijan went number 8. If you guys are GMs again,
yeah.
since apparently I'm just making you guys GMs today,
yes, I guess so.
Would you take that type of talent and not have a worry some of it being a top 10 pick and using one of your top 10 picks on it? Or you guys would have thought about that differently?
I don't know. I think it's all about like your judgment of talent. Like you talk about Saquon Barkley and Christian McCaffrey, like those are generational talents. You know what I'm saying? So when it comes to them, I do think they're worth every penny that they're trying to get just because we all know what they can do.
Yeah.
And they've proved it in the NFL already. Like they took it from college and are doing the same thing to other NFL athletes. So I think if you're a running back, whether you've had injuries or not, like when you're healthy, like based off of what coaches and GMs expect from you, if you can get that done when you're healthy, you're worth the money. But the whole draft, that's a whole nother story because that's to a degree a guessing game. It just depends on what you're comfortable with and how important that position is to you.
I read something recently over the weekend that Christian McCaffrey was asked about it. And he said to the reporter that asked, he said, "You're the first person that's ever asked me my opinion on it." And he said that running backs touch the ball more than any other player
and take the most hits
on the team. And he was really standing up for his position. And obviously Christian McCaffrey is, you know, the top, but he was really sticking up for the position and trying to continue to keep it a high value position. But I just thought it would be interesting to get your perspective because you were a former running back. So,
it's just one of those positions, you know, is a risk reward type of thing. You know, you could draft one and he can be Hall of Fame caliber, but also on the flip side, he's taking a lot of hits. So it's also one hit away from, you know, just you're playing your backup after that. So it's just.
Yeah, but that's everybody. That's us too. That's football.
But we don't take the hits like
as many hits.
True.
Yeah, I get it. But
think about it, we hitting the knees on running backs. Yeah, you know, like.
Yeah.
So it can weigh on you.
It's tough. It's tough. It just depends.
One of those positions, it's tough.
Yeah. Really tough. You then switched positions to continue your story on from there.
I switched positions my junior year. I was still playing nothing but special teams. So one of the catalysts for me switching, other than just Saquon being a great player, was the next year. We got word that we had some new 5-star recruit, some kid named Miles Sanders or whatever.
Yeah, he played for the Eagles.
So I was like, yeah, okay, this is probably about time to get up out of here. At that time, I was only playing special teams anyway, so I was tackling. My game, my part, my contribution to the team was being a great tackler. So I was blessed to be our special teams player of the year that year as a running back. And you know, funny story, you know, I'm going to use this opportunity to give a lot of love to
the platform is yours,
Michael Thomas, because
Michael Thomas,
Michael Thomas, the old Mike T.
Our Mike Thomas.
Because there's a couple of Mike Thomases in the NFL, the older
Mike T. Yeah. Year 12, Mike T. but still young, moves like a young man.
Sure do.
When I was playing special teams, there's two people that I looked up to when I was at Penn State, and that was Slater and Michael Thomas.
Matthew Slater, Mike Thomas.
And, you know, I was a kid that was kind of, you know, you go from being, you know, the guy at high school to now you don't know what your future looks like in terms of football, and all I wanted to do was play in the NFL. So my special teams coordinator, shout out Coach Huff, he kind of was the catalyst for what started my journey as a special teams player, because he was like, "I want you to be Michael Thomas for this team. I want you to go look him up, look at Slater's highlights too, and I want you to be a combination of those two guys, and I want that to be your role."
Wow.
So from then on, you know, I wanted to be playing on defense and everything like that once I moved, but my goal, dreams, and aspirations was to be a guy, a four-core guy in the NFL. I wanted to play special teams because I knew if I could get on a team, what my ability I could do on kickoff and punt and all that stuff, like I would never get cut. That's just how confident
it's
I
really
was
good.
At special teams. Sure. So got the opportunity to start 1 year as a safety and then get my foot in the door in the NFL, and that's all I needed.
And
And that's with the help of God, of course.
Yeah. That's the kind of thing. Like, a lot of players, it's like you said, it's a hard transition from being the guy to not knowing where your future is and not knowing how mm-hmm. important that special teams is. Like, you just hear how he was talking about it. Like, he put a lot into his special team because he knew that he get his foot in the door. That's all he needed. He'll mm-hmm. he'll kick the door in. That's just, I feel like, a seventh round and an undrafted mindset. All you need is one shot.
One shot.
You take advantage of that shot, you know, and – you know, the rest will be history for you. So mm-hmm. that special teams is a lot more important than people think.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, before we go on to your next chapter, this is a good question for both of you because you both went to college at programs that are very well known for mm-hmm. their crowds. Do mm-hmm. you think a whiteout at Penn State is absolutely. The best game day atmosphere absolutely. In college football?
Absolutely. Nobody comes close except for
I want to hear what you got to say.
Maybe LSU.
Boy, I'll you know, okay, LA. You know something. That's what I was going to say.
That's one and two, you know, I think. That. And depending on the season that the team is having, I think that just kind of determines who's one and who's two. Or honestly, depending on who comes to town for that
Can
night
you imagine
game.
Tiger Stadium when Burrow and Chase and Justin Jefferson were there?
That must have been ridiculous. I can't imagine.
It could be against an FCS team, and they probably had that thing sold out. I'm not surprised. But I wasn't expecting you to say LSU.
No, I know. Just hearing guys talk in the locker room, and like everybody talks about where they played, and mm-hmm. somebody had the nerve to say something like Nebraska or something. That's crazy. Cornhuskers, you gotta be kidding me. But no, I know they get active, but it ain't on that
level.
Well,
I thought it would be a good question for you both because you played in the SEC. Yeah. I don't think I've heard more about the tailgating at Ole Miss mm-hmm. instead of the actual game day. Yeah. And I've never been to a whiteout, but on TV it just looks epic. And
it's like nothing I'll ever experience again. Yeah. I mean, that whiteout,
NFL stadiums just aren't that big.
They're not.
Yeah. Penn State's 100,000?
107, but it can pack in about 109, 110.
And that's what, 60, 65?
Yeah, I think something.
Third largest city in the state on game day.
Wow.
And I would say on TV, so like you say,
are you a very big Penn State supporter? Are we going to see you wearing Penn State stuff in the locker room?
For sure. Yeah, I got to.
How involved are you in watching college football?
I'm pretty involved. I'll definitely talk my smack. And I'm going to own it through and through, win, lose, or draw. Most of my...
Got a couple
of
Buckeyes to chalk smack to.
Yeah.
Got some Michigan
cats. It's just me and Nick Bowers right now representing, but... you know, I'm going to stand on all 10 for my guys.
How much did you enjoy playing for James Franklin?
I loved it.
He's one of the
energy guy.
Most well-known college coaches.
Yeah, he's easy to follow. He's a good leader. So I'm glad I got the opportunity to play for him.
For a while, he was kind of in the talks to become an NFL head coach when they were talking about, you know, who could potentially be. He was for a couple of years ago.
Yeah, I'm just glad he stayed with Penn State. Mm-hmm. We need him over there. He's good for Penn State. Like, I'm sure he would do just fine in the NFL, but
he just fit the Penn State
he
mode.
He fits it, and he's close, man. He's that. Close. Couple more pieces, and hopefully he'll be holding up that national championship.
Ooh, yeah, I heard it first.
Penn State men's lacrosse just played in the Final Four this weekend.
Okay. Yeah.
Shout they out lost. Men's lacrosse. They got robbed on a last second call. But I'm just bringing that up since you're the Nittany Lions.
Celtics,
I know. He's
going to
get up and get off the set.
I'm not coming back. Dude, this was a setup. Yeah. Mike set me up. Get me out of here.
Well, so let's now go to the next chapter of Nick Scott's life, uh-huh. which was the Los Angeles Rams. Mm-hmm. Tell us about draft weekend. Did you think you were going to go before the seventh round? Do you remember the call that Les Snead, when he called you? Tell us about how you ended up in L.A.
So there's a lot of people asked me if I was going to have a draft party and whatnot. I knew the deal. I knew I wasn't about to get drafted. So I'm like, draft? I'm not about to be sitting there. Everybody over. The draft ends and you just kind of sitting on the couch like,
just wait.
So what's next? I didn't want to do that. But I did have my Aunt Alicia. Shout out Aunt Alicia. She's now my son's godmother. Awesome. She's always been a big role and big supporter in my life. She's like she's like a personal cheerleader. Like her energy is infectious. So she was there. I needed her there. And then my mom and my dad. And so, you know how it is, draft day, you kind of on the phone back and forth with your agent, teams, you know, telling you all types of things. So that seventh round came around and, you know, reality starting to settle in a little bit because it's the middle of the seventh. I had already talked to the Eagles and was going to go there if I went undrafted. And so then my phone starts ringing and I pick it up. And it's actually Bones, Coach Fossil, the special teams coordinator. Yeah, and funny story about that. That was such an amazing moment because, you know, I was a starting safety in the Big Ten, right? In my mind, that's how I was thinking. And I didn't get a combine invite. And so I'm sitting in my hotel room where I'm training and I get a phone call. It's Coach Fossil. He's sitting at the combine. He's like, "Hey, man, I'm sitting here watching your Penn State, your special teams film. Like, why aren't you here, man? I was hoping I was going to see you." I was like, "Hey, I don't know, man. Like, it is what it is. You know, I'm going to just keep working hard, but I appreciate you showing love and everything like that." And then he said to me, he's like, "Hey, man, I'm going to do everything I can to draft you and get you here." And I was like, "Coach, I appreciate it. Like, that would be awesome. I'm looking forward to it."
True.
And, yeah, of course, you know, with the help of God, it came into fruition. So that was a real emotional time for me. And, you know, I owe Coach Fossil a lot. He'll say I don't owe him anything. But he was the person who gave me that opportunity to have my foot in the door because he believed in me. And that's all I needed. So it was a special moment.
When you were starting, who were the starting safeties for the Rams your rookie year?
It was a combination of John Johnson III, Eric Weddle, and Taylor Rapp.
So the first, you didn't, because your story is interesting in that you didn't start until, right, the Super Bowl game, right?
That was my fifth start.
Okay. That was my your fifth first start. 2 years was Brandon Staley your coordinator?
The first year was Wade. Second year, Staley. Third year, Raw, Coach Raheem Morris. And then fourth year, Raheem Morris.
Which one of those coordinators or all of them did you feel like really helped you Coach land Raw. A spot
Coach
starting?
Raw. Raheem Morris. He saw something in me that a lot of coaches didn't, and he wasn't necessarily like making it known or anything like that. But I think he just kind of got a good read on me and knew how to motivate me because, you know, we wouldn't have long talks or anything, but sometimes he would just walk by me and like he wouldn't even stop. He would just walk by me and say something like, "You way too athletic to not be playing," and just keep it pushing.
A little subtle hands
and just keep it pushing like. That like would get because at that time I'm like, shoot, if I can play special teams for 6-7 years, that's fine. But then he kept kind of nudging me like, "Hey, man, you should be wanting more. Like, you got talent, and if you start putting it together and learning the game and everything, like, you can be special." So he kind of started doing that, like motivating me like that, and I earned a role, kind of rotating in on different sub packages, dime and stuff like that, and then of course the playoffs. Well, actually, COVID happened. It like ran rampant through the Rams 1 week against the Seahawks.
Oh, I feel like I remember that.
Yeah,
I remember that.
Yeah, and so they actually postponed the game, but still, one of our safeties, Jordan Fuller, wasn't cleared yet. So that was my first start, and then Jordan Fuller got hurt the next week against San Fran, the last game of the season, and so I played, jumped in. And then started the whole playoffs.
Right. So I guess I missed that because I thought your first start was the Super Bowl.
That would have been nuts.
That would have been crazy.
That would have been nuts.
Led.
It would have been, if y'all knew that, it would have been bombs over Baghdad. Y'all would have been gunning for the arena. Can you imagine? That would be the worst Super Bowl ever. That would be the worst experience.
Go at 33. That would have been the plan.
That's crazy.
Go through each game. I believe that year... Wild card round, you played the Bucks.
Wild card round, we played.
Yeah, I went down to
the Tampa.
Tom Brady Cardinals. Almost beat you guys.
Cardinals.
Oh, yeah, the Cardinals.
Yeah.
Yeah. What do you think about going up against Kyler Murray?
He's
go ahead, because I got something. I need to know.
He's
you had to face him twice a year. I was just curious.
He's man. I don't want to get in trouble now. Look, I don't want to give nobody bullets.
Just don't say nothing
material.
Crazy. Just
he's enough. He's like Steph Curry. If he's hot, he's hot. You just can't let him get hot. You can't let him get in the street.
That's actually I like that.
Yeah. He's you got to get him kind of off his rocker a little bit. And that it helps when you got Aaron Donald or Hubbard.
For sure.
So, Hendrickson, those boys, BJ, DJ, all them boys, that would help.
Listen. But,
you got to stop. Kyler, the reason I bring it up is he's another interesting person a lot of people are talking about in that his raw talent is so
crazy.
Yeah.
But his height, what does that limit him at the quarterback position? And then the Cardinals paid him all that money.
Yeah.
And then there was the whole, you guys saw the clause about making sure he did film.
I don't like that they did that to him like that.
Not exposed it like that.
Yeah. That
they could have kept that within the organization.
Like, that's a bad look that I don't think he necessarily deserved, but that's a whole nother issue.
But it's a big year for him this year.
It is a big year, and I like Kyler Murray. I think he's a great talent. I would love to see, I think he would take his game to the next level, like mastering what he sees out of defense and just kind of trusting it and hanging in there one extra second.
That's it.
Just hang in there. Because a lot of stuff is sometimes there, but when you start running around, just
get out the pocket.
Stuff gets out of whack. Now it's plastering, and he can make some plays happen like that. He's been doing it his whole career, but you can't do that for a whole season and expect to be, because then defense are just saying, "Oh, we just got to get him out of the pocket."
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Have you played against him?
I played against him once when I was with Pittsburgh. So pretty much with Nick, but I call a younger Kyler Murray. I think that was his rookie year, I believe. Yeah. So he was still getting adjusted to the speed and everything.
Oh yeah, so he was rolling. I mean, that 2021,
they were good.
He was rolling.
I think they were undefeated,
like
12-0.
MVP candidate. Yeah. Mm-hmm. They came to our place the first game of the year and did us like 34-10 or something like that. He was rolling.
Was it you that he threw the pick to like right on the goal line?
No, I don't have a pick on Kyler.
Okay, I don't remember. I think it was y'all playoff game.
David Long.
Yes, yep, yeah, okay.
Yeah.
He threw that right in front of y'all, right in front of
y'all. And right before that, I put it on your boy, AJ Green.
Don't say it. Cincinnati fans going to get on you. All
right, I won't say nothing, but that was a fun game. That was a good game to get your feet wet and get those jitters out for being a playoff start and everything.
And then it was Tampa?
Then it was Tampa, yeah.
And you picked Brady.
Were you?
I hope you kept that ball.
On the field.
What, killed it?
I hope you kept that ball.
Oh, kept it? Yeah.
I'm about to say.
You picked off Brady in that game?
I did.
Okay. Way to bury the lead. I would have started with that. Tell me about that game, because I remember sitting on the couch watching it, and I don't remember the first part of the game, but I think you guys are handling Tampa pretty well early
on.
Yeah,
it was like 20-3.
And then it was the classic, here comes Tom Brady. And then I just remember that epic pass from Matt Stafford to Cooper Kupp. But tell me about that game and the interception.
So that was probably one of my favorite games of my career, because when I say I was just like, I was blacked out, like I wasn't thinking about anything, which is a great feeling to have. I don't want to, like, just for everybody who's listening,
it's a different
being zone. Blacked out on a football field, that's where you want to be.
Because
that's just like you're in your element. You don't have to think about anything. You're not unsure about anything. You're not second guessing your breaks, nothing. So
I've heard about Blackout Trey.
He's starting to learn who Blackout Hendrickson.
Yeah.
I'm telling you.
Something.
What did I say when I seen him in camp? Because we came here for the joint practice.
No, we'll get there in the story.
I was like, who is 91? Because he is insane.
Bro.
I seen him going off the sideline. He was mad about something. He says something like, I can't take it. Like, threw his helmet down or something. Like, yo,
that's true, bro.
He's a dog.
He's a monster, though.
But, he's
come
a funny
on,
dude.
Get off that edge.
Yeah, no, that game was fun. That was like my like coming out party in terms of like earning everybody's trust on the defense, like just the way I was playing. And I'll tell you what, like having Eric Weddle jump in and become a Ram for the playoffs and just his knowledge of the game and experience, that really helped me tremendously, like stepping into that new role at the most important time of the year.
You still haven't told us how you picked off Tom Brady. Oh, okay. You haven't memorized it in your head.
Here's the best part. It was I picked off Tom Brady and I was covering Gronkowski. Yeah, so he ran.
That's the ultimate flex.
Yeah. Oh, that's in the books for sure. Yes, okay. It is.
So, because I got, you know, everybody knows what they've done in this league.
Yeah.
And so to be able to do that, what that did for my confidence and, you know, what it did for the team at the moment, because they still had their little comeback, but it was great. You know, it was like right before the half. First play, a 2-minute drive. Gronkowski ran a big 7 route, and I was able to undercut it and pick him off, keep feet 2 feet in. So it was a good little play.
Playoff then, time too.
Yeah,
that's tough.
Yeah.
That's
then later, man, when they were trying to make a run for it, they came back to kind of that same route. They ran like basically sail out of wing slot. And I made a dive and break up off Gronkowski again. And I was like, am I him? Like, what's going on? Like, I'm in my bag right now. I'm having fun. But yeah, it was a lot of fun. But it's funny because in the league, just as much as you can have those moments, you can definitely end up on the other side. Ooh. So you gotta enjoy those moments while you can. Mm-hmm. So that was a lot of fun for sure.
Let's then move to the NFC Championship, right? Because that would be the next game. But I didn't really get to see much of it because you guys had the early game. You played at 3 against the Chiefs that day. And you kept me pretty busy post that game in the best way. But all I remember was something crazy that a lot of people say the Rams shouldn't have won, because if Jimmy Ward would have held on to that interception.
Shoulda, coulda, woulda.
Yeah, point blank period.
Well, I know that was a big win for you guys because you struggled to beat the 49ers for a while.
Yeah, I'm actually, to this day, that's the only time I've beaten the 49ers. I believe I'm 1-8.
That's a great 1.5.
Why is that?
It's the only one we need.
Why is that matchup so hard for the Rams?
Trying to get me in trouble.
No, I am curious.
trying to get me in trouble.
I worked with Kyle Shanahan for a couple of years.
Hat on in my coach hat, see, keep it, you know.
Keep it G.
Is it just Kyle's scheme is so hard?
Yes.
Yeah.
I would say some teams, there's just, every team has their brand of football. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you get like, two total opposites, and it just, the game is played a certain way by one team and the other team doesn't play that way, and it rears its head in the ugliest form.
Yeah.
The Bengals have a team that's kind of similar. I mean, it's not that bad, but team you guys have struggled against, the Browns.
The Browns?
Yes. Yeah, so week one. Get ready for that question.
Really? This, I don't know. What is it? When they play us?
They turn up for whatever reason. That's the 49ers. The 49ers, every time I go in there, and anytime I go to Levi Stadium, we walk out there, they got the speaker going and everything like that. I'm like, okay. I see what kind of day it's going to be. Like, I tell you what, I have so much respect for the 49ers because everybody plays football how it's supposed to be played on that team.
Yeah.
They down from the top of the roster to the bottom of the roster. Whether it's their star player or their P squad guy, that dude's goal is to run through your face.
Mm-hmm. It feels
That's good, what I'm talking about when I talk about brand of football. They pride themselves on 90% of the time they saying we're the tougher team. And if you can't deal with us running through your face, it's gonna be a long day for you.
Sounds about right.
It's interesting that that given how many times you guys have played that. I mean, Lou Anarumo has said multiple times that he's had to get different players and that they have specific weeks in the off-season program dedicated to studying Lamar Jackson and the Ravens that because you guys have struggled like draft-wise that maybe you guys haven't been able to match up better. But that's a whole nother conversation. So let's go to the Super Bowl.
Let's not.
What did you think about the Bengals offense going into the game?
Man, potent. Anybody can be a problem. You got three number one receivers, got arguably the best quarterback in the NFL. Extremely smart offensive coordinator. And at the time, man, they were rolling. And so we knew we had to be 100% on our P's and Q's. But we just tried to keep the ball in front of us for most of the game, which y'all saw how that went. We tried. granted, one of them.
I already know which one you're talking about. Shout out
but
T.
It's okay. Shout out T. That was a great catch, great play. I'm not going to say nothing about it because I'm a Bengal. That's all that matters now. That's my dog. That was clean play, great touchdown. But it was definitely a great matchup, and it was probably one of the tougher, other than it just being a Super Bowl, it was like one of the tougher weeks to prepare for, because it's like, who do you take away? You got Joe Mixon, you got T, you got Boyd, you got all these dudes. One Burrow, it's like, what?
Pick your poison.
You know what I'm saying?
Pick your poison.
Because he only goes up against him in practice. It's not, he can tell me a little bit, but you went up against him in the game. What is it like to go up against Joe Burrow as the opponent, and not just the thing that everybody says about him, about how smart he is at the line of scrimmage? Like, what's maybe something that you only would know by having gone up against him in a game?
Something only I would know. That's a good question. I don't know how to respond to that. I'll say two things. One, his demeanor doesn't change. We got after him.
For sure.
We sacked him. We put him on the ground.
They was on my boy.
His demeanor never changes. Whether he's up 20, whether it's a tie game, or because it's kind of demoralizing when you kind of get after a quarterback like that, but they still want to sit in the pocket and try to make those throws. There's a lot of quarterbacks who suffer from the Aaron Donald effect, and once he gets after you, by the second quarter, we know you're about to start panicking and throwing stuff up. He don't do that. He just kind of stays poised, keeps going through his reads, keeps taking those hits in the pocket and letting the ball fly. And the second thing I would say is the ball's going to be there. It's up to you make the play. A lot of quarterbacks will beat themselves, but he's going to put the ball where it needs to be, and it's up to you to have the right coverage to make it an incompletion.
Was there any specific play that he got you guys on that you remember?
Any specific play? That first.
That you were like, dang.
That first, it spoke volumes. Jalen was having a year of his life. Jalen Ramsey. It spoke volumes to me about what type of dudes we were dealing with when they just tried them like that on a jump ball.
Deep ball.
I was like, oh, okay. So they're not afraid of anything. So everything's like, at that time, like with how Five was playing, it's like you put him somewhere and you don't have to worry about the side of that side of the field anymore. Like, he don't need no help. Like, he'll just lock it up. Whoever he's covering, that person's dead, and we'll worry about everybody else. But he's over there playing man coverage or whatever we were playing, maybe tight three, tight thirds, but they just tried him, and we weren't used to that. And so, it's more power to him. And I spoke that I think that spoke volumes about those two in particular's confidence in their own ability and trust in one another.
And you were going to say something about it?
I did lose my train of thought listening, but let me ask you: was Joel? Is he a talkative dude? Like, obviously at practice,
Yeah.
We hear it a little bit when we get him going, but money on the line, tight game, anything. Was Joe out there just coming at y'all?
I don't remember him barking at us.
Because you said, you know, his confidence is through the roof.
His confidence is through the roof. I know he was like having conversations with AD throughout the game because they were probably coming in contact with
those. I'm sure some mic'd up got it somewhere.
Somebody got it. And I'm pretty sure it started off like real cool. I can't remember what he said to him. I saw a snippet. I think maybe AD was mic'd up or something. No. But I know they were having some words, whether it was just kind of like, you know, every game is different. Sometimes for sure. I would be in a joking mood and like I'm joking around with the refs and all that stuff. And sometimes like I'm actually talking heavy like to our opponents. It just depends on how the game's turning out. So I don't know what they were talking about.
So how I asked you this in the locker room a couple weeks. How was that celebration after, bro? Like, just tell me all the emotions, all the feels, you know.
Let me set the scene. So you blink, there's confetti everywhere, right? About 5 minutes go by. I thought I was going to be real emotional. I actually, like, no tears, nothing. But it's like the amount of joy I felt when we won that game was taken to a whole nother height when I saw my wife and my parents come down on the field and just – what they had seen me like put into this game. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about like me specifically and coming from a kid who was, you know, one of the top players in the state to being a kid where I'm telling my parents, like, y'all don't have to come to the game. Like, I'm just playing special teams. Like, don't worry about it. Stuff like that. Yep. Just thinking I'm not going to be the player that I always wanted to be. Like, seeing them and how happy they were for me. And then you add to the fact where I was a third string safety that year, but had the opportunity to be the starter in the Super Bowl and actually feel like
so cool.
It's crazy. It's so like cool. That's what was like running through my mind. And I was just overwhelmed with joy. And then the locker room was nuts. Like, any song ever created ever in the history of songs and music that had the word champion, we played that. We played it on repeat. And, you know, the trophy was going around, taking pictures and guys crying, guys hugging, laughing, joking around. And, you know, it was just like pure bliss for a smooth 72 hours.
Well, I'm happy y'all enjoyed it because you can hear everything on our side. Like, so much disappointment.
How's your ring?
Shiny. It's huge. Sorry, Mike.
Hey, listen.
She asked.
Bray, I'm about to say shit. I want to see it.
But, yeah, no. Because
I think I heard, like, Aaron Donald and Jalen, like, designed it or something like
that. Yeah, they had a role in it. Like, they went through and kind of looked at it and was like, this was cool. They asked them some questions and opinions and everything like that. But I told somebody when the ring was being made, they're like, what do you want from the ring? I was like, I want the ring to be like inappropriate and obnoxious if it was anything other than a Super Bowl ring. Like that, I wanted it to be huge. And I think they did that. I think it's, I don't know. We'll see what happens with the Chiefs. But I think it was, it's the biggest Super Bowl ring ever made so far, which is cool.
I have a couple more questions about your Rams time, then we'll go to Cincinnati.
Okay.
What was playing with Aaron Donald like?
It was fun. It was really fun. He's a special talent. You know, he's a great leader. Like, his work ethic is ridiculous. Like,
I'm saying,
the kind of workouts he does, he's always doing something different from like the rest of the team. I don't know, maybe because our stuff's not heavy enough, but he gets after it nonstop. And he's the same way on the field. He's just relentless. And his energy on the field is infectious. And it's fun, you know, being a DB when you got a rush like that. And I'm happy because I feel like that's not going to skip a beat here with the front that we got. That makes your job fun when they create chaos out there and the quarterback's not sure what to do with the ball. And
he's going to hit you in the face with it.
Yeah, exactly.
You just got to catch.
I'm looking for a lot of opportunities to, you know, get those guys some sack with our coverage. And I know they'll get us some tip balls and loose balls up in the air for us. So it's going to be fun.
Did you like playing for Sean McVay? And second part of that question is, now that you've been here, I know you've only been here a couple months, but what are some similarities between Zach Taylor and Sean?
Yeah, I really like playing with Sean. You know, he's a real positive coach. He's always looking at what the positives are. And he's a guy that regardless of the outcome, he can always, you know, find something motivating, positive for us to work on and something to look towards in the future. So he's a big energy guy. You know, it helps having a younger coach in the locker room that can relate to the players and everything like that. And then other than that, I think everybody knows it. He's like a genius
offensive mastermind
in terms of football. Mm-hmm. Like I remember being so surprised. Like I had never had a head coach that knew the defense as well as like they know their own offense. Like he could sit up there in the DB room and coach our technique and call out our calls and point out our mistakes and MEs and things like that. Which I'm just not used to because he's an offensive coach through and through, but he really takes ownership on, like, this is his team, so he knows the ins and outs of defense, special teams, offense. And then the similarities so far that I've seen with Coach Taylor and Coach McVay is just, like, their kind of calm demeanor. Like, I don't know, you probably tell me better than I could, but Taylor doesn't strike me as a guy that's going like
it takes a lot to get him
like,
really
yeah lose going. His head.
Yeah,
like,
it takes a lot.
Yeah, and you know every coach can go there if they want to, but it's a testament to the players when they don't have to. But Coach Taylor seems like a guy that's easy to follow because you want somebody that can be consistent through the ups and the downs rather than kind of riding the wave. So that's a sense I get from him off the rip. And then a lot of the structure of the schedule and everything like that is pretty similar.
So last season was kind of a good season for you. You started every game. Mm-hmm. After you got entered into the starting lineup, you became the starting safety. Rams didn't have that much success, but you had a lot of personal success. Did you know when the season was over you were going to become a free agent and possibly sign with another team, or did you think you were going to re-sign with the Rams?
So I would say I thought I was going to re-sign with the Rams more so before the season. We had talks about possibly getting something done beforehand. But that kind of faded away in a way that I wasn't particularly happy or excited about. If you ask me, I thought it was kind of abrupt, which is the nature of the game. Sometimes talks just stop.
Yeah.
But that kind of leaves you in a place as an athlete where you're kind of that kind of stuff can mess with your confidence. You're unsure about why a team might not want to continue talking about extending you or anything like that. So that was a little unfortunate at the time because I thought that was, you know, you're coming off of a Super Bowl and I felt like I had a large role in their success at that point. And so I thought, you know, it'd be nice to kind of just lock myself in as a Ram. I would have had no problem with that. But that's the reality of, you know, the NFL. Mm-hmm. You don't always end up where you think you're supposed to be, but, you know, God has a bigger plan for you, which I couldn't see at the time. But, you know, I just trusted him, went throughout my season and took it day by day.
So did you think, what did you think about Cincinnati?
Never in a million years. No shot. Me and my wife, man, when we hit free agency, we had a list.
I'm so glad you said that and you didn't say something that was not true. That's like, yeah, I knew the whole time. It's where I wanted to be.
No. We had a list of teams that had expressed interest, you know, all types of stuff. We were ranking them in terms of location and all that stuff. We had a list of maybe like 12 or 14 teams, and Cincinnati was not on it. Cincinnati didn't come onto the scene until like getting real close to like the actual free agency date. And because of that, we were like, well, that's probably not going to happen, but whatever. So it just kind of slowly started like maneuvering and becoming a front runner, just in terms of location and offer and everything like that. And of course I got an opportunity to come here and visit and meet with the coaches, Coach Lou and Coach Taylor and Coach Rob. And after that, I mean, I think all of us, we left that visit feeling great. Like sitting at dinner, like, yeah, there's nothing for us to talk about anymore. Like, I just hope my agent and you guys can get it done, because I feel like this is the perfect thing. And they felt the same way. So thank God I was able to work out.
What was the second place team?
Second place team?
Like, if you weren't here, where would you be right now?
Oh, man. Maybe Cleveland or
been down the road.
Tampa. Yeah. Yeah, one of those two. But that stuff moves fast, man.
Well, it was interesting because Vaughn, I think everybody thought Vaughn was re-signing here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that's a big reason why we weren't really looking at it, because we were like, we didn't talk to Cincy until Vaughn was out of here.
That makes sense. Yeah.
Heading into free agency, I mean, everybody pretty much knew Jesse was going to be gone.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So they was but then it was, I know the team really wanted to keep Vaughn. Mm-hmm. I didn't ever hear Vaughn's side if he really wanted to stay, but I think they were at the combine. They were, I think, feeling pretty good about Vaughn being here.
Yeah.
And then it was like the first day of free agency, it was Hayden, someone else, and Vaughn. And it was like, the Bengals got crushed in one day. And then it was like, wow, they now need. Well, so, Dax, of course, is going to take Jesse's role, but
yeah,
it's a whole new safety room. And Jesse and Vaughn were like, kind of like
been here for years.
Yeah, the heart and soul of the secondary.
Yeah, for sure.
But
for
you know,
sure.
That's
vets, man. That's
the thing.
They're good at their job.
That next guy got to step up. And the way we trusted Vaughn and Jesse is the same way we trust Nick and Dax. You know, obviously it's going to take some time, especially for them to get on their safety chemistry. But that's the thing about Lou and our room. Like, we're going to find ways to figure it out and get us rolling. So,
yeah,
like I said, we trust those guys just as much as we trust the other ones.
And so you've enjoyed your experience so far, and you think, based off what you've been able to see in practice and kind of just going up against the Bengals defense, obviously you didn't because you play defense, but you think you guys can be one of the top defenses in the league this year?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, we talk about top defenses. It means a lot, but it doesn't mean anything at all at the same time. The best defense is that defense that gets it done on Sunday and, you know, holds the team to less points. So I definitely think we have the talent to, like, check boxes and be the best sack team and lead the team or lead the NFL in picks and stuff like that. I think we can do that. But like Mike said, if we can just get on one accord on game day and hold teams to less points than what we get,
because our offense can put up some points.
They're going to put up points, and that's all we need. That's all we need to focus on getting done. And I can already tell the way this team meshes and as a whole, like, game day is going to be fun. There's going to be a lot of productive and respectful conversations on the sideline, but also motivating guys to, you know, be better if they need to and things like that. And that's what it's all about.
And that's like one thing I can say about our defense. I've said this earlier on some of our other shows. We might not have the star or the stars like other defenses, but as a whole, from back to front, I feel like we're the most complete defense. Like I said, we don't have star power. All our star power is on the offensive side, obviously. But just back in to the front four, I feel like we're the most complete defenses.
I have two more questions for you, and then let you get on with your day.
It's been some good combo, though.
It's been some great conversation.
Thank you for joining us.
No problem.
Have you had a chance, I mean, just listening to kind of your life story so far, you went from putting yourself in the starting lineup, winning the Super Bowl, starting every game, signing a second contract. Have you had a chance to take a second to let it all sit in? And how does it feel for you? I mean, you've overcome so many obstacles. Was there a moment recently where, I don't know if it was when you signed your second contract or where it really hit you, because you talked about draft weekend and what that meant for you, but now that you've made it, I mean, how has the last year been like for you?
Oh, the last year has been a whirlwind. And I think I might have had a second to like sit back and take it all in, but my wife and I decided to have a child. And so that kind of got
out of the way.
So no time to reflect, because now we're taking care of a baby. But no, I don't. I try not to think about it because I still think there's so much more I can accomplish, and I feel like this is just the beginning of, you know, I don't want to leave this game, and I wouldn't feel satisfied with my career until I know that I reached my full potential. So I'm gonna continue to try to do that, because I think I still got more in the tank from a physical standpoint. It's still more in the tank from a mental aptitude of the game and growth. And you know, I got a lot of stuff to accomplish as a player. And you know, I think if I still had that type of hunger and everything like that, and I apply it the right way, I'll be in a good opportunity to be a great asset to this team and help us be successful.
What I like to, I'll let Mike close us out after this, but I ask every guest, just because these podcasts, I hope that the listeners, the reason I wanted to do it with Mike is, you, I feel like when you're in the locker room and you're being interviewed, it's a different vibe, because you're, it's right before practice, mm-hmm. and there's a game, and it's kind of like business time. Yep. And mm-hmm. in the off season, it's a chance for the fans to get to know you guys on a personal level. And sure. you never know how your story can relate to someone else, and then you can create mm-hmm. more fans. I mean, I did a little video show with Mohamed Sanu in Atlanta where we would talk about what he put on his cleats. Mm-hmm. And one week he put Dragon Ball Z on his cleats, and we posted the video of him talking about how much he loves Dragon Ball Z. There were so many Dragon Ball Z fans that were like, Mohamed Sanu is my new favorite NFL player. You know, but that's, you would funny. Never know that he was a huge Dragon Ball Z person until he had the platform to talk about yeah. it. So that's yeah. why I like having you guys here. What do you like to do when you're not playing football? And is there any specific thing in your life that is important to you that you kind of want to talk about, that's whether it be charity or you know, just other things in your life? You know, just tell us a little bit about the non-Nick Scott football player.
Mm-hmm. If you know me, you know the answer. But I'll start by saying spending time with my wife and child is number one. After that, golf. Golf.
You just started golfing like 2 weeks.
I don't care. I started
golfing last year.
No. Look at this. And I'm going to use this platform right here, right now. I just started. Listen.
Bro, you not.
I started last year. I got my own set of clubs, and I'm not bad. I'm actually kind of nice. I'm a 15 handicap. For those of y'all
I don't know what
that means, that's not bad. I just started a golf page on Instagram called Scotty Putts. Okay. So if you want to go ahead and follow me on there, I'm going to take you through a little journey of, my golf journey. Basically, you guys come along, take a ride with me in the golf cart. We'll talk some golf. And maybe talk some football. Maybe I'll have Mike on for a round of golf, ask you some questions about the game.
Y'all not getting me to a golf. I'm sorry. Putt-putt. I'll give you some putt-putt.
We can do putt-putt. We'll do a little putt-putt special.
That's it. That's all
you.
I need.
Who do you think is the best golf player on the Bengals roster?
I'm going to go ahead and interject and say.
Trent Irwin. Not Joe Burrow. It's not.
Trent Irwin.
I'm going to say Evan McPherson.
I ain't seen
really?
I went out with this dude. And he's like, oh, man, like, I ain't shoot that great today. Looks at his card. Oh, okay, got a 79. That's
so 79 is good?
That's
for like, a regular person. Not like, for
this is why you got to come out here. 79 for someone who spends as much time as we do in this building. For someone who's, how old is Evan? 25?
Yeah, I don't think he's 25.
He's 24. He's a single digit handicap, basically. So if a golf course has 70, it's a par 72, meaning it should take 72 shots for you
to shoot par. Okay.
Right? He shot a 79, meaning he was 7 over, which means, in essence, he only bogeyed 7 times, meaning he parred 11 holes or birdied and got a double or something like that. But he's really good. He's really good. I shoot like, again, Scotty Putts Instagram. I'm gonna get the ball rolling a little bit. I might have my own podcast one day.
So you're a new golf fan?
No. I'm not a new golfer. I've been doing this for a little bit. I've been golfing for a little bit.
Not according to Mike.
According to Mike. Mike, because we just met. Like, Mike and I just met like 8 weeks ago. But it's fun. I'm real big into golf. It takes up a lot of my time. But it's like, for me, it's mindless activity. So
you like to watch it too?
I'm getting there. Like, I'm getting into it. I'm starting to watch, PGA Tour rounds and stuff like that. So,
when's your next tee time?
My next tee time, I have a chip in at Elks Run Friday, like a little celebrity scramble charity that I'll be at. And also a bunch of other guys. I know Logan will be there and everything like
that. Make sure y'all be there. Golf with the Bengals.
Well, that's what I was going to ask. Listeners, if you have any plugs at golf courses and you maybe want to golf with Nick,
I met a real cool guy.
Scotty Putz.
The golf pro at, get it now. The golf pro at Elks Run, Adam Tolby. I hope it's saying his last name right. He's the golf pro there. He's an awesome guy. Got to meet him. A bunch of the players have met him, and he showed love. We've been able to, play around with him and everything like that. He's got some great tips and everything. Cool guy. Hopefully I can get him to a Bengals game or two. So I'm looking forward to it.
Have you taken him to the Swamp Water Grill yet?
Oh, no. Nah, see.
Swamp Water?
Go.
I don't drink Swamp Water. What is that?
It's a restaurant.
Swamp Water?
That's the Swamp Water Grill. But let me tell you.
What do they serve?
It's Mike's favorite restaurant.
Well, dirty for, water?
For me, they got these char grilled oysters.
Char grilled. So it's seafood.
It's seafood, but they also got burgers and pork stuff. You know, it's really a traditional American type of restaurant.
Okay, but they just have some seafood selections. They use a lot of Creole?
If you're in your oysters and stuff, yeah.
Okay.
Now, I say, I usually go for the oysters.
Okay. I'm a big crawfish.
They got crawfish.
They got blue crab.
They don't have blue crab.
That's okay. They got crab legs.
I don't believe they have crab legs. I don't think so.
Shrimp.
Yeah, they got shrimp. Clams, mussels. I think the only thing they don't have is crab legs. And
they probably do like lobster.
Well, they got catfish and stuff like that.
I can do fried catfish.
Like I said, they got plenty of little pork sandwiches and pork chops, and they really got a whole plethora of options. Swamp Water Grill.
You see why that threw me off a little bit, though?
Listen, take your wife and the kid. The next day, just come holler at me.
Or go play golf and post on Scotty Putz, and then you can go to the Swamp Water Grill.
Let's talk about it. Why won't you? What are you afraid of?
It's not even me being afraid.
So just come out there with me.
I just ain't got no patience to do golf. Just like I don't have patience to watch golf. I don't have patience to watch baseball.
Mike, I was once you. Listen to me for a sec. I was once you. I was scared.
What are you scared about?
I was scared of that golf course. I was scared of going out there and making myself look like a fool.
I was
going to
look stupid regardless. I was going to look crazy.
You're going to go out there a couple times. You're going to slice it. You're going to throw clubs. You're going to be mad. You're going to say, this game is the dumbest game I ever played in my entire life. I'm not coming back. There's something that's going to keep scratching at you. Like, hey, maybe I should try it again. Maybe this time I'll hit it straight. And one time, you will. And it'll change your life.
That's all it takes.
Maybe next off season when we do that part two of our podcast.
I might be the best golfer on the team next off season. Who knows?
It could happen, though.
Who knows?
Come undrafted to who you are now. Why can't you go out there and be the best golfer on the team?
Man, I play football, not golf.
Man, we gotta talk some more later, man.
Scotty Putz, remember that too.
Remember Scotty Putz, but you're awesome. How can you not root for you? I mean, the two of you are just have such charismatic personalities, and how you guys have gotten to where you are and how you handle your business is pretty awesome to watch.
Appreciate you coming in to join Mike and I. Thanks for having me, Mike. It's been a pleasure.
My boy.
Thank you, guys.
See y'all next week.
Next week. Yep, I'll be back. Maybe. I don't know. Give me a shout. Request me if you want.
Follow Scotty Putz.
Sorry, now we got to get somebody else on here, but it was fun, man. It was fun.